From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we have been on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. But my team keeps reminding me that the revolution has already been ignited. We've had some sparks, and now we're building the backyard advantage and throwing fuel on that fire, and it's beginning to happen, and it's happening all over the Sacramento region. Today on the show, I'm going to be sharing with you some things that are happening in Roseville. We have a partnership with the city of Roseville, and we're putting on a program called Roseville Rising, and two of our standout entrepreneurs are coming on the show today. We're going to have Tyler Carreza along with, he is with On-Site Analytics. He's a young founder and happens to have gone to my alma mater, my same high school, which is a cool thing. And he's killing it. He's crushing it. And he's in the process of building a truly great company. And then also Amy Schroeder, she's the CEO of Happy Ladders. And both of these two are solving problems in different arenas. And so we'll be talking about their entrepreneurial journeys and really the things that they're doing to create opportunity for others and their efforts to figure out a way to change the world. And at the end of the show, I'll share with you a little bit about what I am attempting to do in my journey, in my entrepreneurial journey, in my attempt to change the world a little bit with the Growth Factory and the Backyard Advantage and really what we're doing. I'm going to give a little bit deeper explanation about what we're doing with the Growth Factory and what you might want to think about if you're interested in getting involved with us. So stick around, enjoy the stories of Tyler Carreza and Amy Schroeder, and we'll talk to you in a few at the end of the show.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
And now it is my pleasure to bring on Tyler Carreza. He is the founder and president of On-Site Analytics. And if I'm not mistaken, there's a rumor going around that you're going to be a dad here pretty soon, that you have a kid that you're going to have.
Yeah, my wife is 9 months pregnant with our third, and so she's ready to go into labor any minute.
Oh, gosh. So we moved this around to get this done today. So what's the emotion? It's number three. Is this like, oh, no big deal, or nervousness at all?
I'm very nervous. My first two are girls. So I have a five-year-old daughter, a three-year-old daughter, and now I have a son coming. So that's kind of a whole different set of emotions, I think, as a father.
Yeah. So your five-year-old daughter, and how old is the other daughter?
Three-year-old.
Three, and then one. So that's a good, what's the total amount of kids? Are you going to get a whole baseball team?
No. We're done.
I know you're a baseball guy.
No, we're done here. Maybe if we had another girl, we would have tried for two more, then we could have filled out Oakmont's basketball team in a couple of years or something like that. But no. We always want it. Our ideal situation would have been two girls and a boy, and that's what we got. So we're really excited, and we're excited to be done at this point.
So that is really cool. Cool, and I'm glad we got to arrange the show to do it today. What goes through my mind with somebody that is juggling that kind of family responsibility along with this high growth startup is, how do you keep it all straight?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I think, you know, technology has really kind of helped in that realm, because I've always worked from home since I started in real estate in 2015. I've always been home. So I get to see my children every single day. I've gotten to see my children grow up. I think that has been such a great opportunity for me, because I get to work 7 days a week. I get to work as many hours as I want. I can wake up and work. I can stay up late and work, but I'm not having to sacrifice the time with my children, which is my number one priority, as I really want to see them grow up, you know, as much as I can without having to sacrifice my business and my professional goals at the same time.
All right. I want to circle back around to that, but because I want to make sure the audience has a chance to understand your business. Tell us a little bit about On-Site so we can get our arms arms around this opportunity?
So on-site analytics is this idea that we can reduce maintenance costs in a both systematic and significant way at commercial real estate assets if we can collect, organize, and distribute data to the right people in the right moments during the decision-making process. So every apartment complex, for example, has a maintenance budget throughout the year. They have capital assets like HVAC, water heaters, kitchen appliances. Those appliances break down. They need repair. That's just inevitable. That's just a part of management. But we believe that that process has systematic inefficiencies due to a lack of data and a lack of really, you know, sophisticated technology. And so what we're trying to do is just develop technology that locates money-saving opportunities in the existing infrastructure and allows for higher net operating income at these assets.
Okay, so your customer is a property manager or a property owner?
Our customer is a property owner. We work closely with the property manager, okay, who would be more like our user.
Okay, and then walk me through that customer experience. So what do I get? I get some software that tells me what?
So we have a hardware and a software product. Okay. So when we will typically sign on a large property management firm that has dozens of individual clients that actually own the apartment complexes. So we contract directly with the owners, but we do it through the property manager. So let's say a property manager has 10,000 units in their portfolio. Well, that 10,000 units might have 150 apartment owners. We contract directly with them. And what we do is we have a little microchip. It's called near field communication technology. Basically what it is, it's a memory chip that's connected to our servers. And we put those directly on the front door of an apartment unit. And that allows us to hold all of the maintenance data for every appliance located within that apartment unit right on the door. So anybody with a smartphone is able to put their smartphone right up to our microchip, and they can view the maintenance history of every single appliance located in that unit.
Okay, so that information is helpful so you can decide, hey, is this thing under warranty? Oh, the last guy came out and put a new burner in the oven, or what? Is that kind of stuff?
Correct. So the existing structure right now is you might have, let's say you have a 300-unit apartment complex. So you have 300 air conditioners, furnaces, water heaters, just at that one facility. Well, you might have, let's say just for your air conditioners, you might have 3 to 6 vendors that you call if one of your air conditioners were to ever break down, because in summers in Sacramento, of course, if your air conditioner breaks down, you need to be able to get that thing back up. So if vendor number one isn't available to come fix that unit, you just go down the line, you call your different vendors. Well, the problem with that is that you could have vendor one come and let's say they replace a capacitor on one of the air conditioners and it breaks down a year later. Well, if that vendor is not available to come back and fix it, the property manager might call vendor three to come out, but they don't know what vendor one did a year before. So there's all kinds of inefficiencies, right? Like that capacitor could be under a warranty with vendor number one, but there's no way for vendor number three to know that.
Okay. So by holding the smartphone up to the sensor, you can get that data. Where does that data get input from? How does your system get the data?
So we get it from three different sources. The first is the property manager's management software. So that will include information like what exactly did the tenant say is the problem. That'll include notes from the property manager about the unit. It will also include any notes from like on-site maintenance people. The second channel is we get it through invoices from third-party vendors. So those invoices have a ton of really rich data that's never utilized again once it's filed in the accounts payable, you know, accounting system. So we get information from those invoices, and then we get information directly from the manufacturer as well. And the way we do that is using our tags, anyone with a smartphone can take a photo of the serial plate on the piece of equipment, which has information like the model number, the serial number, the manufacturer. So we can take that information and go to the internet and have like a web crawler, for example, go through and pick up as much information as possible. What's the manufacturer's warranty on these units? What are common malfunctions? What are the parts and, you know, information, things like that? We can all include all of that on the tag. We can also include it you know, on the back end to property managers when they're trying to make decisions on, you know, different pieces of equipment.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Yeah, I can really see it helping. I'm a small-time landlord, but I can see for somebody who has enough critical mass, enough properties, that it really could create some super efficiencies. All right, so interesting business. What stage is the business in?
I would say that we're just coming out of our product market fit stage, and 2023 is really about growth and scale. You know, we spent a lot of time in 2021 really diving into the problem, making sure we've identified an actual problem that exists in the marketplace, you know, trying to find a solution that fit that problem, and then verifying that it was a big enough problem that we could actually, you know, it was warrant a company, you know. 2022 is really about, you know, getting our beta out into the field, making sure that it worked in the way that we intended, you know, doing that. So 2023 now is really about, okay, we have established that we've identified a real problem. We've identified, you know, a real solution that's going to continue to evolve, of course. And now it's like, all right, now do we have the ability to actually scale this and make this in a real company?
Anything surprise you by having the product out in the field?
Well, we had a lot of surprises.
Like, you might change the product a little bit. That happens, it seems like.
Yeah, and so we intentionally started small. We started with our first beta was like 350 units in Citrus Heights, and then by the end of 2022, we had about 2,000 units or so. But we stayed local in the Sacramento area, and you know, we pretty much did everything ourselves. We put the tags on the doors ourselves. You know, we monitored everything on the back end, you know, intensely in a way that we would never be able to do at scale. But we really took our time, you know, to make sure that the things that we didn't know, we knew that there would be things we don't know, to make sure that we could address those in a significant way. And, you know, like, there's problems that you never think of, like, okay, if we're going to put 2,000, you know, of these microchips on the front door, how many are going to be taken down by tenants?
Oh,
you know, yeah. If we have a building that gets painted, are the microchips still going to work if they get painted over with the doors?
Do they?
They do. Yeah. so we're really happy about that.
That's nice.
You know, if doors that are in direct sunlight, is that going to affect the chip? I mean, there's 1,000 things, and we kind of went in with the understanding, like, there's going to be, you know, we don't know what we don't know, but let's grow in a way that we can, you know, address those one by one as they come up without getting super overwhelmed with other, you know, logistical issues that come with scale.
What's the longer term vision for the company?
We want to completely reimagine the way that decisions are made in the maintenance space. So, you know, right now we feel like little to no data is being utilized in making some of these decisions that, you know, have real implications to how an asset performs and what it's ultimately worth out in the marketplace. And so, like, for example, we would like our technology to be consulted whenever, you know, there is an appliance that is not working properly or an air conditioner that's not functioning right, because we want our technology to be not the decision maker, but we want our technology to be sophisticated enough that we can analyze, you know, the hundreds of factors that go into any maintenance decision without the property manager having to be an expert in air conditioners, for example, mm-hmm. or having to just blindly trust their vendors, you know, and their suggestions when the vendors are really working with really limited technology on their end too. They're working with limited data on their end when they're, you know, doing their diagnoses and making their recommendations. So really what we want on-site analytics to be is just a really simple piece of technology that has a big impact in the way that maintenance decisions are made and ultimately how, you know, the assets perform.
Yeah. Now, apartment complexes are probably a big enough market for just about anybody, but does it scale to other types of commercial properties or to consumer residential type properties?
You know, That's a great question. We do believe that we'll be able to scale to other commercial assets, particularly office and retail. You know, office, for example, you know, a large percentage of the operating expenses at an office building will be ultimately the HVAC cost. I know that you guys have made some investments into Hank And yes. I love that company.
Yeah, we actually ended up with an exit on Hank to JLL.
Yeah, that's right. And that, you know, their the thought process is a little bit the same. They were kind of they identified kind of the same opportunity that HVAC expenses, especially in office spaces, are such a huge part of the operating expenses. They you know, kind of approached it differently. Our approach is more. You know, I would call it defensive, because we're trying to eliminate potential mistakes that happen out in the field due to a lack of data and a lack of technology at the point that decisions are made. Whereas I felt like Hank was really more on the offensive, and they were totally revolutionary in what they did. I just love their story. You know, they did more in the tenant comfort space and using AI and stuff like that. But you know, kind of the same end goal, in my opinion, which is, you know, if we can take $10,000 off of your operating expenses at a 4% capitalization rate, that's a $250,000 gain in equity to your asset. That's a big deal.
Without question. Does it save the property manager time?
It does save the property manager time.
I would have to think they would like that, because they're not having to fumble around with going to all these different places looking for the data if they're going to do a thorough job.
So early on in our market research, we kept hearing this recurring issue with property managers, and that is a large portion of their time is spent talking to vendors about what they're seeing, because vendors will come. Let's say, you know, they're looking at a furnace. They open up the furnace and all of a sudden it's like, well, there's a third market part here. This doesn't look like it was from the manufacturer. Man, what's this, you know, duct tape doing over here on this part of it? So, you know, a thorough vendor will call the property manager and say, hey, what do we have here? You know, I'm trying to figure out what's going on, what the story is. And the property manager would have to take the time to go into their property management software, which is only really one piece of the puzzle, right? Because you've got other invoices, you've got stuff from the manufacturer. So, you know, we were talking to property managers who would say, like, you know, sometimes we'll have these issues with our, you know, air conditioner, for example, and it'll take 4 to 6 hours of our time to try and fix it, you know, try and resolve this situation with the vendor. And that's totally a waste of time for them. You know, they're losing money when they do that. We don't do a ton of promotion on that, just because there's so much noise in the prop tech space that's marketing specifically to property managers, telling them that they can save them time. We kind of try and stay away from that because we don't want to get lost in the shuffle.
Okay, so you and I met for the first time over at the Roseville Venture Lab. You were involved in a program called Roseville Rising.
I was.
And you stood out. It's obvious, it was obvious to me from the first time I met you to the time when you pitched at the Roseville Chamber event, that you had something special and that you are something special, and you really stood out. So I guess my question of you is, you know, where does that come from? Because what I always say to myself, one of the Markisms is, you can either stand out or you can blend in. You make the decision, and you stood out on the first day by speaking up and basically telling a little bit about your story instead of sitting back, waiting and picking your spot like a wallflower. Mm-hmm. Have you always been that way? Where did that come from?
That's a great question. I appreciate that, because I was very nervous that first day when I came.
So, you were great. I didn't sense that.
Well, I even emailed you. Afterward, I said, I gave this answer. You said, well, you know, what is your company? What do you want it to be? And I spoke up and I kind of blanked, but, you know, I just kind of went for it. And it wasn't the message that I wanted to convey. I actually emailed you afterwards and I said, that wasn't what I wanted to convey. This is really what I want my company to be. And you said, well, I commend you for, you know, taking the risk and putting yourself out there.
You bet.
That. But, you know, I think my personality is a culmination of a lot of things. Like, you know, early on, I was very, very fortunate to have two parents who loved each other, but were, you know, overly supportive of everything that my siblings and I wanted to do. They really believed in us. My dad, who was an immigrant from the Polynesian island of Western Samoa, you know, immigrated here to the United States. He would tell me at a young age, you know, the reason we moved to America was because in America, you can't be president unless you're born here. So we moved here before you were born so that you could be president.
Wow.
Well, as a kid, I thought he was serious, and he kind of was.
He was sending a message. Being shared on the Mark Haney Show.
Exactly, right?
It's real.
So it was, and that was real to me. And, you know, I was not a great student in school, but,
You mentioned Oakmont earlier. Did you go to Oakmont?
I did go to Oakmont.
So did I. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you went to Oakmont too?
I went to Oakmont as well. Okay. And I was not a great student. The sign behind you says, "See, students need love too."
Yes.
Because that's kind of my mantra is, you know, hey, it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters you with enough hard work and enough of the right decisions, you can get anywhere.
Right. So at the age of 26, my wife, who was, I was younger than that. I was probably 24. My wife was an elementary school student at the time. She was teaching third grade, I think. And she had been doing reading assessments of her students. And she, you know, just kind of, we were sitting around the table one night and she asked me to do, you know, a reading assessment. And she said that if I were in her third grade class, she would have called my parents because I was performing lower than some of her English learning students. So Dang. She thinks that I have severe dyslexia. Mm-hmm. I've never been tested for it. I'm not particularly interested in whether I have it or not. At this point in my life, I've kind of, you know.
Just play to your strengths.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I think from a young age, I realized that even though I wasn't a great student, I could get by if I had great relationships with like my teachers, for example, or I was able to, you know, I noticed that, you know, just being a good person in class and, you know, that it went a long way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I kind of got by in school by that because I was deficient in a lot of other areas. And I think that really carried through into my professional career, both as a professional baseball player, which is what I did before I got into real estate, and then throughout real estate, for sure, is just double down on the things I'm good at, which is talking to people, developing relationships, you know, being, you know, articulating my expertise in a way that's valuable to people, and then finding people around me and being humble enough to find people around me who are smarter than me and are good at the things that I'm not good at.
Mm-hmm. You see any parallels between baseball and entrepreneurship?
I do. And the biggest is just the relentless repetition of hard work. And that is really what baseball taught me. Baseball was my whole entire life growing up. And I recognized pretty early on that if I wanted to do anything like from a college standpoint, if I wanted to go to college, baseball was going to be my path to get there. And so from the age of about 13, I really approached my baseball career like a job and a career. Everything I did in my life was to support my baseball career. And so that meant, you know, I didn't do social events. I didn't, you know, anything that I wanted to do had to come after I fulfilled my obligations.
What position did you play?
I played first base.
First base. You're a big guy. So for those of you that are listening to this on podcast, maybe not YouTube, how big are you? 6 foot?
I'm about 6'4".
6'4", yeah.
Yeah.
I could tell you're pretty big. Are you left-handed or right-handed?
I'm left-handed.
Left-handed. So you get stuck over at first base.
Which I should have been a pitcher, but my dad was, you know, didn't know baseball. He didn't grow up with baseball. He grew up with cricket.
Oh, okay.
So he should have made me a pitcher, but he didn't understand the game. And so I ended up at first base, which is a tough route to go once you turn professional, because that's where they stick all the big hitters who can't play, you know, other positions. That's where they hide their defensive liabilities. And so that was kind of a mistake, you know, and on my part, but it ended up, you know, working out in the end.
Well, so you were a power hitter, I take it?
I was a power hitter.
From the left side? Yeah. Okay. And then playing first base. And so what, you ended up making it to the pros. You played in the Twins organization?
Yeah, the Minnesota Twins organization for just under 2 seasons.
Okay. That can be brutal. You were going up through the minors and so on. Was that pretty, what's the quality of life in doing that?
You know, you don't get paid very much.
Okay.
And you're traveling around a lot. I think in one season I played in Florida, Tennessee, and Iowa. And I kind of shuffled around those three states over a span of like 6 months, which would have been okay, except for I was engaged during that particular summer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you come out of a game and it'd be 11 p.m. and they tell you, well, you're going to Florida tomorrow morning. Your flight's at 10 a.m. And then you have to go figure out, I had to go figure out my wife's itinerary. How do I get her there? And, you know, maybe she had a job in the place that we just were and she's got to then quit and pick up something else in the other place. So it was an experience. I am so happy that it happened. I could never do it again at this point in my life. I still have friends who are kind of in the grind and doing all of that. And I commend them for their, you know, their ability to stick it out. But it was a tough go, you know, good for that time in my life, but it was tough.
You know, this is, to me, this is what America is all about. Your dad is an immigrant. He moves here in time so that his son could be the president of the United States if he wants to. You're humble enough to realize that you're not the best in school, but you can play baseball. And now, look at you. You're an entrepreneur building a business right here in the hometown that you grew up in, and it's really inspirational. So to the other people out there that are inspired by you, any words of wisdom for the up-and-coming entrepreneurs out there as we think about them too?
Going through this process, and I'm closer to the starting line than the finishing line with on-site analytics, but I would say that over the past 2 years, there have been a lot of times in my business where I would just be sitting in my office thinking, what am I doing here? You know, I think there's just so many times of feeling lonely as an entrepreneur, feeling like you don't know what you're doing. And that, you know, I think there are a lot of times when you just feel like your idea doesn't have merit or doesn't have legs, or who, you know, you think, who am I to think that I can do this? And I think the best piece of advice that I can give is to just keep moving forward and just keep putting in the hours. And you have to have faith that in the end, your vision will come to light, because, you know, there's sometimes when that's kind of all you have, but you just have to have the faith that it's gonna play out the way you think it's going to.
Keep moving forward, put in the hours, and keep the faith. In the end, it's going to turn out the way that you like. It always turns out different than what you thought, I think, but you're chugging along. Well, we're really proud of you, and really congratulations on getting recognized, and really the best is yet to come for you, Tyler.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet. I am now here with Amy Schroeder. She is the founder and CEO of Happy Ladders. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thanks, Mark.
Appreciate you being here. Now, you have built this business, Happy Ladders, and you got recognized by my team as really having a really special business that's doing some great things and solving a big problem. Can you tell us a little bit about your business?
Yeah. So Happy Ladders is a SaaS-based autism therapy platform. And it's a little bit different than the conventional autism therapy in that we have what's called a parent-led approach. And so really our mission is to empower parents to work to help fill their child's potential and not be as dependent on professionals, have more ability to work with their kids at home and in the community, and in general, just more control over their family.
So what happens now? Now they're overly reliant on professionals to help their children develop.
I don't know if I'd say overly. The conventional therapy model requires therapists to either come into the home or for the child to go to a center. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is with the rates of autism increasing, the demand for those services has totally outpaced supply.
Okay.
And so, our answer to that is using kids' assets that they already have at home, people that care about them more than anyone else, and using them to help kids progress.
So really putting the power in the hands of the family. And so tell me a little bit more about the product. If I'm a parent of somebody with autism, what do I get that helps me to help them?
Yeah. So what we've created with Happy Ladders is an autism therapy platform, and it's all based on developmental skills. So right now our initial curriculum is for toddlers and preschoolers, and parents can go in and they can take these really parent-friendly developmental assessments to figure out exactly where their kids are at and what they should be working on for communication, play skills, self-help skills. And then from there, the software directs them to lessons and activities that parents can do with their kids at home. And it's for the most part play-based. So, learning's fun. It's easy. We have parents that make good progress with their kids, working with them as little as like 15, 30 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are an early stage company. Mm-hmm. How would you describe the stage of your company?
Besides early.
Early, yeah. Do you have, are people using your product? Do you have revenue?
Yeah. We have a few pilots running. We have some revenue. We are, super early stage. We're working with an MVP. Mm-hmm. So,
minimum viable product.
Yes. Uh-huh. And we have big plans to develop a dedicated mobile application this next year. So we're really excited about that and looking at ways that we can increase engagement, really look at getting to parents, reinforcing parents for just consistency, for working a little bit, you know, on some of those really important pivotal skills.
What kind of feedback have you had about the product? Because to me, it seems like a parent is going to give you feedback that's got a lot of emotion based. We get, you know, your kids playing Little League. We're very emotional about the outcome. Uh-huh. And in this case, I could see it being even magnified. And so are you getting emotional sort of feedback in the way that it's helping them to change lives?
Well, I think that's key, is that, you know, the conventional therapy model is not very emotional. Mm. You know, it's more black and white. It's more skills based. It's you know, much more structured. Parents don't respond well to that. You know, they don't, that's that they don't want to sit down and work with their kids or do drills with their kids. And, and you're right, our interactions with our children are very emotional. And so we found a lot of success. And the research shows, you know, that when we incorporate teaching into play, into communication opportunities, those are highly emotional, you know, situations. And especially for parents whose kids may be nonverbal or are just now learning to speak at, you know, 3 years old, there's a lot of emotion in there. And so a good parent-led model really has to understand that and speak to that. And also just kind of work at a parent's pace too, because it is such an emotionally charged time.
Yeah, I can only imagine these breakthroughs when somebody learns how to talk or walk and do these first things that maybe as a parent, hey, I didn't know when they would be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And then you were part of that breakthrough. It's got to be rewarding for the parent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And very empowering. And I think that's one of the reasons why I, you know, felt really strong about taking a parent-led approach to autism therapy when I started this. You know, prior to Happy Ladders, I had an agency and that provided in-home services. And we switched to a parent-led model back in 2007. And, you know, it was for that reason that you're talking about, is that, you know, previously, I worked within a model where the therapists were getting all of those amazing first moments. And if the parent was lucky enough to be in the room, that was great. But it robbed families and parents from a lot of those firsts, you know, those first words, first time interacting or playing with a particular toy, first time eating a new food. And so with a parent-led model, it's the parent that's directing all of those firsts. And so they get to be there front and center, which is pretty incredible.
Pretty incredible, without a doubt. So what led to building the SaaS-based model versus the in-home practitioner? What went into that decision?
Well, let's see. I had an in-home agency with two partners for 14 years, and that did really well. And we were actually very influential in kind of bringing a parent-led approach to other providers in the Sacramento and Bay Area through a provider network that we worked with. And my co-founder and husband, Sean Schroeder, exited his software business here in Sacramento in 2019. And it was about a year after that that I thought, maybe it's time to do something. Sean had always been bugging me to take everything that I have been doing over the last 15 years and putting it into some sort of box that could be delivered to families virtually. And, you know, I was running a business. I can't do that. I can't even wrap my head around that. So there was an opportunity, a window for us to work together and start Happy Ladders.
So now you're able to, as this thing grows, there's no limit on geography in terms of like the amount of impact that you can have. You could have impact all over the world.
Yeah, and that's a great point. So access for autism therapy has always been an issue, especially, you know, even locally, even within the Sacramento area, even though Sacramento is a fairly I would say resource-rich area for autism therapy services, and it has been for many years. There's still families that can't access it because they live in El Dorado Hills. And you can't get people to travel, you know, past Folsom, you know, very easily. Or they're in Grass Valley, or they're in Yolo County. And so, you know, it's incredible how, how concentrated, you know, services can be. But there's so many families outside those areas who are still looking to access those and need those services. And I would say even outside of just rural areas, you know, states across the country have not had access to the types of services that we've had here in California. And so access is a big thing. Creating something that's scaled and that could grow beyond the bodies, you know, that physically could provide the service, which is what I previously did, was really important. And so that's what's really exciting about Happy Ladders too, is that we can reach thousands of families pretty easily.
What's the long, so you're in the early stages now, what is the longer term vision for the company?
Mm-hmm. So we have big plans. As I mentioned, we're working with our MVP right now. We're starting our development of our new application. And then, so with that, we'll have curriculum for kids up through the age of 6. And we also want to incorporate, you know, other parent-led resources. So parent-led speech and parent-led occupational therapy and nutritional resources, behavioral resources, all things that parents with children of autism need access to. But to do that, you know, through industry professionals, but in a parent-led format. So once again, kind of really trying to demystify all of these, you know, big terms and scientific, you know, the data and all of that. And take that away and just give parents really tangible, meaningful things that they can do with their kids to affect some change, some real change today.
Do you anticipate this being like a national company or larger than that?
We would love that.
Yeah. How are you going
about? I think there's definitely the capacity for it.
It's the type of company, I think, that you might consider using venture capital. How in terms of the growth, are you seeing yourself like a rocket ship and getting venture capital and taking it that direction?
I don't know. We are both, Sean and I are entrepreneurs, and we have bootstrapped this project up till this point. We've got our sights set on some grants, and, you know, we want to make sure that as we look for investment, that it's, you know, people that really understand and really feel passionate about the mission. But yeah, I think that there's definitely an opportunity for some great investment partners.
So what a lot of entrepreneurs, you know, we know it's not easy building a business. So you had this experience building the business, a business already in this space. So you took a lot of those learnings to this effort. But maybe for us, what obstacles are you facing right now besides building out the product?
What obstacles are you facing? I would say market, you know, really understanding, not understanding who we're serving, because that's an easy question to answer. But, you know, the payer market is pretty complex. There are insurance mandates for autism therapy in all 50 states. That's a big deal, but figuring out, you know, how best to navigate that and how to proposition ourselves so that we can fit into multiple state mandates is a big challenge.
Is this the type of thing that a doctor might prescribe to you, to somebody? Is that,
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And then the insurance company would help foot the bill.
Yes. With the conventional therapy model, that is typically how it works. Okay. A pediatrician or a developmental psychologist would recommend therapy. And then the parents would go to the insurance provider and say, well, who do you have that can do this? That is one major issue with access, is that many insurance providers don't have a very big network. Right. So for a lot of us who have to call for a specialist, we call and we think we're just going to get the name of somebody. And our insurance provider says, well, we have this one person and they're 45 minutes away. And then you call that one person who's in network and they say, well, we have a 9-month waiting list. And, you know, for families whose child just recently received an autism diagnosis, they don't have 9 months.
Right. I went on this now. I can see that being huge. I could also see this way of delivering the service through the parent is being a lot more cost effective for the insurance carrier. Right?
Yeah.
It's way more cost effective than having to go see a doctor.
Yes.
Would this be something that was done in conjunction with a doctor and follow-up visits and that kind of thing? Or could it be totally standalone?
Well, it can be done in conjunction with other autism therapies that are taking place. So, like I said, it's fun and it's play-based, it's routine-based. And so anything that a parent does to teach their child at home isn't going to interfere with other teaching that's taking place. As well as other therapies. Kids with autism typically have speech therapy and occupational therapy. They've got a full schedule, which is one of the reasons why parents really appreciate being able to do as much as they can in as little time at home.
Well, I wanted to give a shout out to my teammates over at the Growth Factory. You were recognized, you went through a program called Roseville Rising, mm-hmm. which we do in conjunction with the city of Roseville. And you stood out as one of the cohort leads, if you will, in terms of founders. Maybe give us a little bit of I'm involved in the program, but I wasn't in the day-to-day trenches of the program as much. Give us a little feedback on the program. Was it helpful?
On Roseville Rising?
Yes.
It was great. It was, it really helped us define our message. And I think from there, really define our roadmap and just help us feel more confident in kind of what we're doing. I would say that, especially because of COVID, right, everyone working from home, and also business ownership, entrepreneurship can be lonely, right?
Yes.
So being able to be part of Roseville Rising and go to class, quote unquote class yeah. twice a week was really neat. And I really appreciated it. And it was just a great group of people. And then all the resources through Roseville Rising, through Growth Factory, Monique was amazing. That's and great. I always felt like every time she would speak, I just wanted to record her because she's just, so rich with just great advice.
She is incredible. My dad always told me to surround myself with great people, and I've been lucky to do that with mm-hmm. Monique and Rick and Scott, who's over here, and some other of our teammates. It's a really cool thing that we have. And then we're growing through partnerships like the city, and we're working on some of those kind of partnerships with other municipalities as well. So I'm glad to hear that it was helpful for you.
Yes,
because every entrepreneur matters, not just the ones that we invest into, right? I'm an investor. And so we end up as a venture capitalist investing money into companies like you. We did not invest into you. I want to make that clear, but we still want to help. That's just kind of that's what this show is about. That's what we've been working on for the last several years. How do we help entrepreneurs? And it's great to see that we're able to do that a little bit at scale with partners like the city.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so maybe one last question, because I'm thinking out there that there are other people that are facing this challenge we call entrepreneurship. Any words of wisdom for the aspiring entrepreneur? Because you've been doing this for a while now.
Yeah, a few times. Between Sean and I, we've made professional careers out of entrepreneurship.
Are you glad you did it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I think we're a little addicted. I think you get addicted to entrepreneurship, and as stressful as it is to kind of live on the edge, you get bored if you're not on the edge. And so I think that we ask for it in a lot of ways. The first thing that comes to mind is that Dory from Finding Nemo. Mm-hmm. She says, just keep swimming, just keep swimming. Because you just never know, when things are going to get a little bit easier. When you're going to get a big break or you're going to get a boost of confidence. So yeah, I think that just keep going, just learn from the mistakes and, just keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
I love it. Amy, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for being a part of Roseville Rising.
Yes,
and really, thanks for helping change the world in a positive way. I feel like that's the beauty of entrepreneurship is sometimes it's lonely. Sometimes it's scary. Sometimes you're unsure, but at the end, when you're able to have this impact, it really feels good and it's great for society. So thanks for being a part of that.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet.
Now, Let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show, and really good to hear the stories of entrepreneurs that are really at the beginning stages, but in the process of making a huge impact in the areas that they are focused. So really enjoyed today's show. And as promised, I am going to deliver on taking a little bit deeper dive into what the Growth Factory is and what you might be thinking about in terms of your desire to be involved with what we're doing. The Growth Factory is something my co-founders and I, Monique Brown and Rick Spencer, launched about 15 months ago, and it's a startup accelerator with an accompanying venture fund and the Backyard Advantage. And the Backyard Advantage is something truly unique, and I'm going to share with you in a minute what that's all about. But we've invested into over 30 companies so far in the last 15 months. We have attracted close to, I think it's over 100 investors now, over 100 mentors, and a number of corporate and civic partners. And together, this tribe, these people are the Backyard Advantage. These are a group of people that get it. They understand the power of entrepreneurship. They understand what entrepreneurs can do for our hometown, because when an entrepreneur succeeds, we all succeed. It's good for the region. So we've brought this group of people together to really impact entrepreneurship in our region. So how to get involved? Really, if you want to get involved, you can come to our events. Of course, we welcome that. One of the events that I do here at my office here in Rockland is I do something called Hanging with Haney, where it's small group events for entrepreneurs that are sharing their stories, sharing your stories. And it's really a little bit like AA for entrepreneurs, where we talk about how great we are going to be, but we also talk about how difficult it can be. And then there's a Q&A session with me. And so that's one way you can get involved. Another way you can get involved is come to our other events like GFX. This year's GFX is going to be October 5th, 2023. It'll be at the grounds in Roseville. And it's a great way to just come check it out and see what it's going on, what's going on with the Growth Factory, the Backyard Advantage, and this tribe of people that really care about entrepreneurs. I would highly suggest that you do a save the date on your calendar right now for October 5th. The other thing that I think I want to make clear is, because I live in Placer County, I tend to know a few more people in Placer County, but this effort, the Backyard Advantage, is really for the entire Sacramento region. And that goes all the way to Chico and Woodland and Davis and Elk Grove to El Dorado Hills and all the way to Lincoln and Marysville and Yuba City. It's the broader Sacramento region. So if you are in that region, we want you. We want you to get involved. And there's different ways that you can go a little bit more hands-on. We have, if you have experience in building businesses, then we have mentorship opportunities. As I mentioned earlier, we have over 100 mentors now, but we want people with specific domain expertise, people who have built businesses, maybe exited businesses or raised money. That kind of experience is invaluable to these early stage companies. Also, looking for investors. I think this fund is full now. However, we're building this investor community, and there's a lot of people that want to get educated in this asset class. And so I would highly recommend that if you have interest in investing into startups or learning more about how to invest in venture capital, then you need to come see us, and you can come down to my office here on Granite Drive in Rockland. And then also, we're reaching out to civic partnerships. I've mentioned the partnership in Roseville, Rockland. We have one with El Dorado County. We've got one with Sierra College and a number of others, but they're all over the region. It sounds like it's a little more on the outskirts of town, but we are building relationships with corporate and civic partners right in the heart of Sacramento, like SMUD as well. So if you have interest in getting involved in some kind of corporate or civic partnership, we want you, because it takes a village, as we say, to really build out this entrepreneurial community and to build out the backyard advantage. And so to all of you that's thinking about, what can I do? What am I going to do in 2023? Well, I would say pick up the phone, reach out to me on Instagram or LinkedIn, or just stop by my office here in Rockland. And I want to know you. I want you to get involved with what we're doing if you have an interest and you get it and you believe like we believe in the power of entrepreneurship. So all you out there fighting a good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, and to all you out there fighting for entrepreneurship, here at Haney Biz, here at the Growth Factory, here on the Mark Haney Show, we're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.